This is Remote Ruby.
Have you any remote idea to the meaning of the word?
Andrew.
Yo.
I was started like last week. I was just went vulgar immediately.
You were there. Yeah, that was then. But I want to talk about now because you were there today when I received the most devastating news I've heard in a long time. I was under the impression that I could record enough phrases and give it to Apple so that it would make Siri in my voice and that I would be talking to my voice as Siri. And I was living in a beautiful paradise where that was a reality before it all came crashing down right in front of you when I realized it was not for that purpose. It's a speech assistive technology.
Yeah. The use case didn't make sense.
That I wanted to talk to myself.
Well, again, use case it makes sense. I thought that you were going to talk about the callback thing.
I don't want to talk about that in front of a guest, okay? Because that's some separate beef that you and I have to settle.
Fair enough. And Andrew's right. We have a guest today. We don't have a host, Chris, because he's, I assume, in bed. That or he's recording videos with a high fever and freezing.
Nice.
That's what he said. He said he was freezing.
Is that what he said? He said he was freezing.
Did you read the message?
No, you just told me. And that then negated the reason for me to read it. That's how the brain works.
I'm going to be your source of all news in the future. Tell you,
already are for a lot of it. I don't know if you know this already.
A mixture of true and false things. And I'm going to see what that's like in a year.
You go one of two ways. I might end up with me joining a cult. Who knows?
Oh, Lord. Okay. Well, today we are joined by Vladimir Dementyev of Ruby on Rails fame, Evil Martians fame. I'm sure other fames I don't know about. Author of a new Ruby on Rails book as well. And we have so much to talk about. And thanks for coming to hang out with us today.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks, Andrea. And thanks, Chris, who's, I get, staying well right now instead of doing work, right? Yeah, glad to be here and talk about stuff you mentioned and not mentioned yet. So, yeah, let's go.
All right. Well, we'll hit the gas pedal. Most recent, most relevant, you have a book that just released a few weeks ago. Do you maybe want to kind of give us a quick overview of what the book covers?
So the book is called Layered Design for Ruby on Rails Application. So my working title was just Layered Rails, whatever. One of the titles were also Onion Rails, like an onion, but peeling layers from out of the onion. Yeah. So it's about designing, architecturing mostly Rails application in a way that keeps the code base maintainable, at least as I perceive it from my experience. And the book is focused on the Rails way. So it tries to follow the Rails way and extend it to the areas not covered by the framework itself. And I try to convince the reader that this is the way. So if you decided to go with Rails to boost your productivity using Rails, to ship kind of a, I wouldn't say high quality, but high efficient in terms of time and money wasted product, you should stick with Rails principles and apply them to the code you write. So to the abstractions you try to uncover in your code, to the patterns you try to employ. And that's what the book about. So it's about Rails and about how to build on top of Rails and stay Rails-ish kind of. So that's how I would pitch the book. I don't know if you're going to buy it with this pitch, but yeah, personally, for me, it's kind of a reflection of what I've been doing with Rails in the last almost 10 years. I realized this only when I started writing the book, actually, because originally it was just, okay, I have a bunch of blog posts. I have a lot of talks. I worked on dozens of code bases and a lot of stuff I haven't yet revealed to the public for many reasons. And I wanted just to grab all together and find some common pattern, common idea, some narrative for the book. And that for me was the way to kind of put my knowledge into the right place and just to build a book of myself, like my Rails diary, if you could say, I would say like something like that, because it's kind of a summarize everything I learned while working on web applications, Rails, not Rails. So not only Rails during the last 10 years. Now I can say I committed this patch. And now I can start doing something new, actually. That's how I produce content. It's always a fact of persisting something, like committing in a Git, I mean, right? So I'm just having a checkpoint where I can return back if I want, but now I can start doing something else. That's one of the reasons why I decided to go with the book, actually.
I feel like I changed as a developer when I worked with Nate Hopkins, because he was like, hey, I do things the Rails way, and we're going to do things the Rails way. And where I had learned Rails, that was not the case whatsoever. And so all of a sudden, we're like, we're going to do things the Rails way, and we're going to think about this and how like Rails would want to solve this and that. And it like completely changed the way I thought about writing code moving forward. And if that's what your book is offering, like, I'm excited to read it, because that's kind of where I like changed, I think, a little bit and matured as a developer.
Yeah, I think another title which would be good for this book is Back to Rails. Because when I started just using Rails, I was very excited of everything not Rails-ish in Rails applications. I learned about design patterns. I saw numerous talks, read blog posts, and I realized, oh, Rails doesn't have it. We must add it to our application just because Rails doesn't have it, you know, and it's going to work better. And all these alternative ecosystems, which were injected into Rails like foreign bodies. And we did a lot of that. And eventually, when I got more experience, I had experience with many applications, and I found that it's not the way, actually. It makes everything less, I would say, maintainable. Like, the word is very vague, I think. But anyway, I realized that when we try to inject something into Rails and include some like patterns, architecture decisions, which are not Rails aware, I would say, we just lose all the benefits of building with Rails. We're just building some Ruby application with a mix of design techniques, conventions, whatever, turns into mess and makes building things slower, supporting them harder. And we shouldn't do that. We should stick to the principles we chosen in the very beginning and learn how to tame them to satisfy our needs. That's a problematic part of Rails, I think. And that's what I want to kind of help with in the book and then what I learned along the way. But yeah, the idea, if you're using Rails, stay on the Rails. Do not go off Rails. Or if, at least if you do that outside of the Rails code base. I'm not talking about microservices stuff, but services extracted from Rails is also sometimes that's just a necessary thing. And we're going to talk about it in the context of Anycable, for example. And I cover this a bit in the book, but the idea here is, if something doesn't feel like Rails, either do not go this way or set it aside and make them live together, but as independent pieces. So yeah, that's another thing I want to express in my book. So my return to Rails, because 5 years ago, the best way to describe a Rails monolithic application 5 years old or older is to look at the app folder and see how many subfolders do you have. And from there, you can learn about like generation of developers, of engineers working on this application. Because you can see, okay, in 2015, 16, DryRB was a shiny new thing. And you see like validators, transactions, whatever they have there. But then a new team took over the project and they just decided, okay, we don't want to use it. We're going to use another shiny new thing. And you have many different concepts, many different abstractions, which pile one on top of each other and turn the code into something, into non-livable place. Like another thing, analogy I love to use to express this concept. And it's hard to work with. As being a consultant for the last 7 years, I think, I used to work on mostly legacy code bases with lower level of maintainability. That's the reason why people reach out to consultants, right? For contractors, especially experienced, like kind of high quality. I can say that like Evo Martians in the Rails world, known for being good. And unfortunately, that's the side effect of that, that we work on hard problems mostly. We do not work on young greenhouse applications. Sometimes we build something from scratch, but a most interesting use case, especially for me, like my specialization is working on refactoring, on performance optimizations and all that stuff on large projects, large Rails projects. And I've seen a lot of different types of mess there. Not like I can't say everything was, I understand why that's happened. They're still on this kind of a user facing side. These are great apps. They help people. But if you take a look inside, well, you can see that the productivity, which led to the first releases, to customers acquisition or whatever, didn't help with keeping the code base in a approachable state, at least for the newcomers like me, even like me.
I have a question I want to hook into real quick there. So when you're talking about like different companies come on to help out with the code base and they have different ways of solving problems, right? So like you mentioned, like try RB transactions, maybe someone like we use Interactor Rails at Podia. Like people just solve these like problems differently. But the ones I'm thinking of are basically kind of where kind of the framework ends in a way. These things we're talking about are kind of like service object type things. And this is a really good example, I think, of like where the Rails way ends. And I'm curious if you have some more examples of kind of where that boundary gets crossed of, hey, we're not inside the Rails way anymore. And we kind of have to steer our own ship.
Yeah. I was talking about the structure of the app folder. So, and the number of various concepts, because this kind of described the concepts we use in the app. Usually there are patterns when we have app services and everything inside. App models nowadays, also popular way, everything is model, like put everything in a model folder, but technically it's not always the thing. But speaking of different use cases, like different code bases I've seen with Rails being used as just infrastructure, I would say. I think the types of this, well, that was very popular, first of all, in the Rails API only era before we moved back to full stack development, like nowadays, like a year ago too. There are now more full stack apps. But at the moment when JavaScript revolution kicked off and we got all the tooling around it and ECMAScript 6, 7, whatever, and we started writing Rails API only apps, that's, I think, the moment when most application turned away from the Rails way, because Rails way is built around HTML as a primary transport for sending data. And it's built around like MVC paradigm. There is a view layer in Rails, kind of. But in API, we still have the representation layer, which is just a serializers or JBuilder or whatever. But it's very different. And there are different techniques used, especially when a lot of apps try to adopt technologies from other ecosystems like GraphQL, like JSON API resources, the very messy thing in Ruby world, I think. That led to the Rails part of the code base being very slim. This very anemic, as Martin Fowler said once, like anemic. He was talking about anemic models, but in Rails, we usually have anemic controllers. Just take params, put them into some service, or then put them into serializer. That's it. And all the logic lives somewhere else outside of Rails. And it's just implemented every time by every developer in a different way. We just didn't have a common sense for that. That's what we see in other ecosystems, by the way, which are not driven by conventions. So that's, I think, one of the reasons why the variety of different Rails code bases blew up in the recent years, just because Rails lost its power as a full stack developer, like 5 years ago, I think 7 years ago. And now we're coming back to it. And I think the Rails, that's why the Rails is getting more popular again, just because we move into full stack development. The Rails is getting, again, better. We have now more tooling for more abstractions built in and more flexibility in the framework. And that's great because we'll see. I think there's going to be another crisis in like 5 years and we will see this problem again. I'm not sure what's going to happen, but anyway, that's inevitable. That's the life cycle. But for now, we should enjoy the Rails way and try to benefit from it and to stay productive with it as in the early days.
It feels like vindication for me, because when Rails started going through that API phase, that's when I started writing Rails. So 5 years ago, 2018, I started writing my first Rails app. And everyone was like, nah, Rails is just an API thing now. We do all this JavaScript stuff. And that way of writing code is in the past. And like, I'm reading all this new stuff. I'm learning all this new stuff as a new developer. But I like writing Rails apps. And I really tried to stick to that. I really just want to write Rails apps. And now 5 years later, it's like we're back to writing Rails apps and it feels so good.
Yeah, that's true. I would say that even for API only apps, we can follow the Rails way like as much as possible. But I don't know why that's not happening, at least from my experience. I never built an API only app myself, I think. Yeah, I used to. It was GraphQL driven application and we tried to be as Rails-ish as possible. Actually, a lot of stuff in the book and the examples are coming from this project. But that's one we built from scratch by Evil Martian's team. That probably explains why we stick to Rails-ish abstractions. Otherwise, I do not see this often in the wild, unfortunately. maybe fortunately for us, as again, consultancy company, as long as people write code for profit and not for developer happiness and maintainability, there is always a work for us.
I want to know how you got to Evil Martians, because like I said, when I was first starting to learn to code, like I've read a lot of your articles and I've always known he's like, that's the Evil Martians guy. So I'm curious how you got to be where you are with them.
It started, as I said, 7 years ago, 2016, when I joined Evil Martians. Prior to that, I worked at a CTO and for most of the time, the only engineer on the team for startup. Originally, we built the learning management system in PHP and jQuery, whatever. And I discovered Ruby and discovered Rails. And I was amazed by the kind of a simplicity of making things work, of shipping new features. And I rewrote everything from scratch in less than a year, just by myself. Since then, the project's still alive and it's doing well. And it still have 50% of the code base written by me and my team back in the days and Rails. But that's not the Rails way I'm talking about in the book, unfortunately. So that was the Rails way I experimented with when I was learning Rails. The type of engineer, like newbie Rails engineer, who's too easy to be hooked up by all the shiny design patterns, all the conference talks when someone says, okay, you should use form objects, where the objects like presenters, this is the way. And I go, wow, yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that tomorrow in my code base because I'm the only person here and no one can stop me. And that's how I built this app. Fortunately, they survived. Now they're trying to embrace better techniques and so on. But actually, that's the reason why I decided to join a different team. I needed someone to stop me from this crazy experiments, like unwise, just and meaningful. I wasn't thinking about consequences. I have no idea. Like I had no experience with that. And I knew that Evil Martians kind of back in the day, they were rock stars in Russia, in Moscow. And I already knew them. And we kind of knew about each other and realized that, okay, that's the best place, at least in this country. I never thought about leaving the country. Funny. Anyway. And I applied, I passed that interview, very stressful, 3 hours of talking about hardcore technical stuff from RubyGC to PostgreSQL internals to whatever. And I remember I was sitting in my car because at the moment, I didn't want my partners to know about me trying to change job. So I was sitting in my car at the parking lot and having this interview for using my Android phone. Yeah, that was a great experience. So, and I passed the test task, which is now the Legidza Jam. It was kind of one of my popular projects. It was my test task for Martians. You can imagine the level of test task we had back in the days. These days, it's sometimes it's about the same, actually. And right now, we have a task for one of the candidate to add my SQL or my SQL, I don't know which one you prefer, support to Legidza. So it's going to be interesting. So this project's still full of test tasks for new Martians. And when I got the offer, when I joined the Martians, I realized that the environment there is so kind of a fruitful to produce new stuff, to experiment, to just to build new things. And yeah, I had an opportunity because I didn't need to work on the product anymore. I didn't need to work on weekends to make the server go up again after it failed. And that kind of stuff I used to do when I was the CTO or the startup. And I started doing open source, like I would say professionally. I had some open source before, but I had no idea how to work with pull requests, how to promote my code, how to talk about it, how to share my ideas. I had nothing. I didn't even have a Twitter account. They forced me to open one through Martians. And I opened it again 7 years ago. And I needed it to start communicating with people outside of my company, of my bubble. And one of the main reasons, I think, the spark that lighted all everything that happened after that was actually Anycable. And again, thanks to Evil Martians, because that was kind of a tradition back in the days when a new engineer joins the team. Back in the days, we have just one or two people a year, so not so many. And the new engineers must at least propose talks to the upcoming conferences, biggest conferences in Europe and Russia, everywhere. And I was the newbie and CTO approached me and said, okay, you must apply for the conference. Please provide a topic, write a proposal. Oh, wow. never did it. Like a year before that, I attended my first conference, the very first time. And I was, wow, that was kind of a feeling when you first, for the first time you attend a conference with like 500 attendees, world known speakers from around the world. It just feels like magic, especially Rails conference. It's the vibe of the Ruby community. And the very next year, they told me, now you must go on stage. I go, what? Okay. And I started thinking of the ideas I already had and tried to kind of pitch them within Evil Martians. And I pitched Anycable and they say, oh, that sounds cool. Yeah, write about it. Go and submit your talk. And of course, the talk was accepted and I had to write Anycable. So there's some proof of concept before the talk. And I think that's what everything started. I realized, so the project, the talk, the blog post I wrote about it after that got a lot of good reception. Even DHH retweeted the tweet with the Anycable introduction. It was, wow, wow, that's the guy who built Rails, like who invented Rails, and he's thinking that Anycable is cool. Cool. That's cool. Yeah. And I realized that I need to do more of that stuff. And everyone in the team was also telling me, okay, you need to submit talks to everywhere in the world. And I got my first year, like in 2017, I submitted different proposals, like a couple talks to maybe 10 or 15 conferences. And I got like two accepted proposals and everything else was rejected. And that was card. Like even now when I got rejected, like yesterday for RubyConf, anyway, I'm feel a bit like disappointed, like what I did wrong, why they didn't choose me, but anyway, and I started working on this and it took about a couple of years, as you said, like 2018 was the year where finally the efforts were kind of became successful for conferences, for blog posts, for Anycable became kind of we got first production usage outside of Evil Martians, at least known to me. Maybe they were before, but some people approached me for help, of course, but they also said that this is a really cool project. Like, we were able to reduce the number of servers by 10 times by switching from ActionCable to Anycable. And then when everything started seriously, like, turned into serious business, like serious thing about open source marketing, as we call it, because I started writing more. I found pleasure in writing blog posts, actually, partially thanks to our tech editor back in time, who joined the team a year after I joined. And we got a full-time tech editor in the team who helped a lot with storytelling, with all the things regarding the blog posts. I think we wrote one of the first blog posts we wrote was about Rails 5.2 and Active Storage. We wrote it together. And after that, I've started writing a lot because writing helps me to keep my mind stable, I would say. It helps me just to stop thinking about things I'm thinking about all the time. I can just write them down. And even if I can publish them and get some discussion or not necessary, actually, but some reaction, that helps me to stabilize my mind, kind of. So that's kind of a anti-stress thing for me, writing, talking, doing whatever is visible to the outer world. That makes me kind of a real human, actually. I think that's the thing. When someone sees your work, that make it meaningful. And not only like very limited number of people you work directly for. And I realized that, and that's why I couldn't stop doing this. Because we were becoming more stressful every year. So I started writing more. And a year ago, I started writing a book. That's how it ended up. So I do not kind of against all the kind of medicine. That's why my antidepressant is writing or speaking or whatever. So that's probably the explanation of. And as a side effect, that made Evil Martians more recognizable in the world. Because I think for a couple of years, like 18, 19, most of the visible work of Evil Martians was done by just a few people like myself and probably like Dmitry Sepelev, who's no longer at Evil Martians, but he's still doing a lot of open source stuff. And Sarah Dolgan also, who left us for Shopify. But anyway, there were just a few people working on open source conference talks, blog posts, at least at backend department we had. But we did a lot of great stuff over the years. And I think a couple of 2 or 3 years ago, we realized that we should invest into this part of our life more. So writing blog posts or taking part in conference talk is now kind of a part of the job of every developer. If they have spare time, like we have bench time, for example, now between projects, we try to invest it into education, like self-education of the team and marketing stuff. So because every developer at Martians has a lot of things to say, a lot of experience to share, but not everyone has maybe this passion to writing. First of all, that's something that you cannot encourage or enforce even especially people to do. That's something that they should find in themselves. And that's why we have a tech editors who try to do interviews to write most of the content just to fill with the deep technical details from the engineers. But we try to cultivate this sharing culture, I would say. It's not like about just marketing and stuff. It's like knowledge sharing. Because as long as we share our experiences, our knowledge, well, it's not only about bringing good things to people. It's like bringing good people to us also. So we can't say it's just we're doing this for good. That's helped us to stay at the right side of all the business affairs. We're not just people who take your money for our work. We're people who try to make software development better, especially for web applications and developer tools, because we know how to do that. And we use these tools. Like in recent year, we kind of switched our focus from consumer products to developer tools. I think about half of our clients are developer tools or something like content creators or whatever. So because we're kind of working for ourselves, we're using products we built for our clients. One of the examples I've been sharing recently on Twitter since I started working on it was HTTP stuff for Anycable is HTTP desktop version. So it's like I never used any HTTP clients like Postman, for example, probably the most popular one. And HTTP is originally command line utility from the Python world, and they decided to build desktop version, and we help with that. And I'm using it every day right now. So I'm using the product built by the people I know, and I can reach out to them to say what I like, what I not, what I want to fix. And that's just a different feeling, making the whole ecosystem better by investing into it, our knowledge and expertise.
I do want to say I used HTTP because I read about it on y'all's blog. And I very much enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's really cool. I like it too.
If you're like most devs, too much of your time gets sucked up with downtime issues, troubleshooting, and error tracking. How can you spend more time shipping code and less time putting out fires? Honeybadger is how. It's a suite of monitoring tools especially for devs. It's the only system that combines error monitoring, uptime tracking, cron and heartbeat monitoring into a single, clean, fast interface. Sure, you could get familiar with any interface, but why waste your time learning some Franken-system interface that looks like an airline cockpit when what you need is clarity and speed? You won't know if Honeybadger will really save you time and trouble until you see how it works in your own toolchain. With 2 lines of code and 5 minutes, you could see for yourself. Honeybadger automatically hooks into popular web frameworks, job systems, authentication libraries, and front-end JavaScript. Imagine fixing errors before your users could even report them. 5 minutes of your time with a free trial is all it will take to see if it works for you. It just might be the best 5 minutes you've spent in a while. Check it out at honeybadger.io.
We've made reference to Anycable. And I think that, if I'm not mistaken, it's one of the largest kind of well-known libraries that's come out of Evil Martians. And maybe for those listening not familiar with Anycable, would you mind maybe explaining what it is, what problem it solves, and the benefits of using it?
So Anycable started as an attempt to make the performance part of Action Cable. So let's assume everyone knows what's Action Cable. Oh, if not, Action Cable is a component of Rails responsible for real-time communication, or simply speaking, WebSockets. So we can easily build a WebSocket-driven application in Rails without knowing anything about real-time, about WebSockets or whatever. You just have abstractions to use, which is an interesting point because, again, a reference to the book, because it's one of the good abstractions in Rails, like channels. So you describe your business logic and the client communicates over WebSockets. You have live updates or whatever you call it. So server push. And Action Cable is written in Ruby. It integrates into your web server, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But the problem with Action Cable is that it's not suitable still for high load applications unless you scale horizontally like Basecamp with hundreds of servers. But for a typical Rails application, if you reach even like 1,000 of clients, maybe 5,000 of clients, concurrent clients in your app using your Action Cable server, you will notice at least a high memory usage. And you will have to, if you, for example, one of the use cases of using Heroku, you will have to pay for larger dynos and your check will be much greater. And if you're looking for low latency of communication over WebSockets, that's another weak point of Action Cable for the same kind of reasons. So you need something else. And for many, I think before Action Cable, there were some solutions built on top of Event Machine in Ruby. And I know that people used them kind of successfully, but Event Machine had its own problems related to compatibility with the ecosystem. And I think nowadays, almost no one uses it. And we're hoping for new fibers to finally fix this, but still it's, they are not as popular as well. So most Rails applications had to switch either to third-party platform and service solutions or to hand rendering Node.js or Golang applications in most cases to handle WebSockets and somehow over API or whatever they used to communicate with Rails. So Anycable aimed to solve this in a Rails way. So originally Anycable, and now it's also can be used like that, was meant just to replace the WebSocket part. So you don't need to change your Ruby code, your JavaScript code, whatever. So you can start with Action Cable, reach the point when you cannot handle the load anymore, and then replace the server with Anycable. Because Anycable is a combination of tools. It's WebSocket server. In theory, the WebSocket server can be written also in any language, but we now provide the official one written in Go. And it has RubyGem, which is a connector, kind of a RPC server, which consumes WebSocket commands from clients and translate them into Action Cable commands to handle by your Ruby application. So you don't need to change your Ruby logic. And that's what Anycable is. And that's how we started. Today, Anycable is, as you just learned, is also kind of 7 years old if we start from the very first commit. Today, Anycable is more than just a performance-oriented replacement for Action Cable because it comes with actually a large number of additional features on top of it, including different transport support. Kind of a couple of weeks ago, we released service send event support, which actually makes it possible to connect to your Action Cable channel from pretty much anywhere. So you can use browser without any client libraries, just use built-in event source object. You can even use curl from the command line and consume updates using it. You cannot use HTTP desktop because HTTP desktop doesn't support streaming responses yet, but HTTP command line can be used as well. So you can use anything. And nowadays, service send events finally supported by all major browsers because we lacked service send event support in Safari, I think until the beginning of this year, like it's very recent addition, but now we have them everywhere. And that's why we decided to invest it into support for service send events and Anycable. We also have long polling for someone who still support Internet Explorer. Yeah. And we have such customers and we have features like reliability built in. So clients do not miss messages if they got disconnected for a short period of time, for example. So we help you. We do not provide it out of the box like magically, but we help you to reach at least once delivery guarantee because Action Cable doesn't provide any delivery guarantees at most once. Like the official title of no guarantees is at most delivery guarantee. It sounds better than no guarantees at all. So at most once, and with Anycable, you can achieve it exactly once or at least once if you want. And many other things like around developer experience, like instrumentation and whatever. And it could be deployed anywhere and used not only with Rails. That's another selling point. And right now we're working on a demo project using Anycable as a real-time server for a Next.js app deployed on a Verso and using Verso, how is it called, serverless functions to handle the WebSocket commands, the RPC part, remote procedure call. For those who are afraid of the RPC acronym, so it's a smart word to describe request response API style communication when every request is just a command and we expect some result back acquired. So that's internal part of any cable and can be implemented over HTTP nowadays. And that's how we can make it possible to use it with serverless functions on any platform, actually, in any language. So it brings any cable or cables or channels capabilities to any application, any platform. And that's what we kind of are targeting right now. Because in the Rails world, I think nowadays I can say that any Rails application that reaches some number of users already thinks about switching to any cable. That's kind of a default plan. Still, some prefer to go with PaaS and waste their money and time for that. But well, that's their money and time. I don't care. But yeah, now any cable became the default answer to the question, how I should deal with WebSockets and Rails app if I have a lot of concurrent clients. That's why we're trying to conquer other ecosystems as well and bring this to them.
Yeah, we've been flirting with the idea of switching to AnyCable for the last several years. And I anticipate when I see you in a few weeks in Amsterdam, we'll talk about that again. But yeah, it is nice because like you said, at a certain level of scale, people need it. And so it gives you the confidence to start with Action Cable and build out your concept and ship it. And then as it grows, you know, oh, I can switch this and keep going.
Yeah, but we try and actually to move away from this idea, like start with Action Cable, switch to any cable, because now we give you the features as well. And some features, maybe like reliability, you maybe don't care about it a lot, but it's also helpful to have the confidence and messages being delivered to clients, you know, to not think about it. But the thing is, when you start Rails up, you don't think at all about this problem, whether it exists. I gave a talk at RailsConf previous year, 2022, called it Pitfalls of Real Damification. And I think that's the talk that should be included in the Rails guys, because you need to know what to expect from real time connections, because not just request response. You need to know that, oh, if there is no network, there is some broken connection or whatever, you just lose messages. You do not see them. And for most use cases, I think that's okay. But if you're building a chat system or messaging system, it's good to see all the messages that arrive, not miss anything, because it can miss something important. So that's why AnyCable is useful even for the greener apps as well. And we plan to bring more features like that, like presence tracking is on the list. It's kind of in progress. And what else? Actually, we had our first ever meetup as we released 1.4. Which is, I'm keeping 2.0 for the really big release, which is going to change everything. That's why every minor release right now can bring a lot of new updates. And it's actually, every other company would call it a major release. And our patch releases are minor releases. But anyway, so yeah, it just sounds like 1.4. Why it's important, right? But it's very important release, which brought this reliability tooling, that HTTP API, internal API, and so on. Anyway, we had a meetup, which I think, and also I probably link it somewhere, when I talked about the future of AnyCable and the features we're working on. And the number of features is huge. I'm not sure about the timeline they're going to be delivered, but we're trying to release at least every 2 weeks right now. So we finally got some time and workforce to work on AnyCable stuff this summer. And especially having the conference in a few weeks, I want to release something for this particular event for Rails World. That's probably going to be something Rails hotwire oriented, no TypeScript, just Ruby. So part maybe, I don't know. Oh, that's a bummer. Actually, the feature I've been thinking about, I can probably share it with you. That required some hacking around Turbo library, but I'm good with JavaScript. I don't care. I am glad I hadn't started working on it before the recent changes, because that would force me to rewrite from scratch.
Have but now, an early rebase to do.
Yeah. The feature I want to bring to Turbo and Rails, actually, it's not just any cable feature, but I'm going to implement it first in any cable, is something I would like to borrow from Laravel. You like Laravel, you know.
I'm in.
This is kind
I
of don't a remote Ruby and Laravel podcast. So they have their own like Laravel Echo component responsible for real-time updates, and we want to make it compatible with any cable eventually. But for now, I want to bring something to Rails, and that's going to be the feature broadcast except myself or to others. They call it like the broadcast modifier, which allows you to send the update to all the connected clients except the one that triggered the update. And that very useful feature if you're building something, even if you're building a chat application, you create a new message and you usually send it using a AJAX request. So using regular controllers, whatever. And then you broadcast the update to everyone else. But in this case, if you implement it right now in Rails, if you send the response back with the new message created to the AJAX request and add it to the page and then broadcast the update, they're going to be two identical operations of adding the same message to the list. It can be handled by the client side codes, just to not to render two messages, but you never know which one arrives faster. So there could be race condition. The contents can be different, whatever. So it's just easier to be sure that you're not sending this message to the initiating like browser tab. And that's what I want to add to Rails. It's going to be as simple as that. You just broadcast and say to others, but under the hood is going to be a few patches and at the turbo side and the Rails side or whatever action cable side and any cable side. So that's what I think I want to present at Rails Forward. I'm not sure when this episode is going out, before or after, actually. So is it a spoiler or not?
Will be a spoiler.
Okay, that's good. It will be a great spoiler if I won't build it, you know.
There we go. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's a better. Yeah.
It's a teaser, not a spoiler.
Oh, there we go.
Okay, let me be honest. Right now, I'm actually writing my talk. Yeah, I'm just practicing it with you. Thank you.
This is a very safe space for that.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. So what do you think about this feature, by the way? Should I include it in the talk? Maybe should I build it? Maybe not.
I thought of like instantly, like when I would use that. And I think that's not something that always happens. So yeah, I can see several reasons why I would use this type of feature. If you are in like a Teams workspace on the, I don't know, an app like Craft or something, example, and I make a change and that change is supposed to ripple out to every other team member, that's exactly what I would use this for, right?
Yeah. So I think the reason it's included in Trello by default, I think they have a lot of use cases. Maybe we should probably ask them and they could help us to write this part. But I already pitched this idea with a couple of times, some private discussions among like Hotwire users, and they were kind of, yeah, we're excited and would like to see that. Yes, that would help us. So yeah, that's another thing. Like, I'm trying to use this idea, apply this idea in everywhere since I'm using different languages and I'm trying to bring the best parts usually back to Ruby. Well, sometimes I bring Ruby ideas to Go, which is complicated, but mostly like design ideas or whatever. But I think that's an important skill in the modern software development oriented different ecosystems. At least like you need to learn about two different types of languages, ecosystems, whatever. And that make you from one dimensional to two dimensional or three dimensional, I would say. So just be more, I would say, to bring volume into your knowledge.
Yeah. By taking patterns. Here's a confession. I have read a lot of your code by like, I used to go to your GitHub and read the news stuff you were reading because I used to pick up on a lot of patterns that I had never seen before by specifically reading your code. And also because at some point you were helping us with some stuff in Seamless Reflex. And I was like, this guy understands engines. And I would like trying to just scour for like types of code like that. But I learned a lot of patterns by doing that. And that kind of started like this thing that I continue to this day where like just going out and reading code bases and like thinking about how you would apply those patterns elsewhere and taking inspiration from other libraries and other ecosystems is very powerful. It just gives you more tools in your tool belt to solve things.
Oh, I was talking about this. I was thinking about the idea, maybe, I don't know, what is it? Maybe podcast idea, blog series, whatever. But that sounds interesting. Like, I know that people read others' code. I do that not so often these days, but sometimes usually in the languages I don't know well, right? Or C Ruby code. I read it a lot, but I actually highly recommend it. It's interesting, but especially if you set up all the IntelliSense in your editor, because oriented in the C code is not easy without it. But I'm thinking if it could be something like podcast, screencast, show, TV show, when you have the offer and you have readers of the code and they just pick 5 points from the code base and they ask you like, why did you do that? What the point of this? Because I'm trying to write commit messages usually, or like test cases for some stuff. But I'm pretty sure even if I opened my code base written 5 years ago, I would find dozens of places which would lead to, oh, okay, why? Why I did this? What the point of this? There should be the point, but now I don't know it. I would like to know. That's an interesting way of learning the language, the ecosystem, the techniques. Actually, I think that could lead to a lot of cool content. Something to a YouTube show. Do you have plans on launching a YouTube show?
I would love to launch a YouTube show. I think everyone should launch a YouTube show as a YouTube watcher myself.
Or maybe like TikTok is still a thing. I don't know. Really short videos of
YouTube shorts.
Oh, yeah. YouTube guys. Yes. Okay.
I don't have TikTok. I don't want to be left out.
I don't even watch YouTube. So I'm just, my knowledge is purely theoretic. So.
Well, we really appreciate all the cool stuff you do for Ruby on Rails and all the things you share. The Evil Martians blog, like I know we've talked about it a lot in this podcast, but it really is so high quality. There was a point a couple of years ago where I just told someone, yeah, if Evil Martians writes about it, I just accept it as the way to do things. So it's really good. And I appreciate you taking the time to sit down and write and share all those things and for your coworkers to do the same.
Great. Thank you, Jensen. We're really happy to hear that, especially from you, also from the person for doing a lot for this community. So yeah, finally, I think that's the first appearance of Martian Ruby, Remote Ruby podcast.
I think so. Yeah.
So finally, we're going to have a page with Remote Ruby on it in our events section.
Yeah.
Link it to you. That's a win for us too.
Finally, I can put that on my resume.
Well, where can people find you online?
I usually tell people, go find me on GitHub and file an issue if you have problems with one of my projects, because I'm pretty sure most of Ruby users have problems with my projects. But apart from that, I'm still using Twitter and I'm not going to switch to anything else. It's probably too complicated. And another place when I'm taking an active part in discussions from time to time is Tumulus Reflex Discord server. So we even have a dedicated Anycable channel, but I'm trying to be there, other channels as well. And probably Rails Performance Slack. So that's another place I have open and like in the list of my Slack tabs on all devices. So I can take part in discussions there as well.
Awesome. Well, again, thanks for joining us. And Andrew and I will see you here in a couple of weeks in Amsterdam.
Yeah, great. Thank you for inviting me. See ya.
All right. We'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye.